Am I just coming up with shit? Am I taking over this whole podcast and making it my own? Because I'm ready for that as well.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Dungeons & Degrees. My name's Adrian.
And I'm Alex.
And today we have a special guest. Special guest, introduce yourself.
My name is Gray. I am like a gold medalist in the US Olympics. And I also run a YouTube channel that posts not enough. And a TikTok that also doesn't post enough. But I like talking about D&D and video games. And I like talking about D&D a lot right now. And my audience doesn't like D&D that much. And so that's why I'm here to talk as much as possible about D&D.
Hell yeah. What do you have a gold medal in?
No, it was a complete... I'm so good at Smash Bros. Brawl that I, like, just... They made the sport for me in the Olympics, and then I won it.
True story.
I quit. True story.
You got gut.
What am I supposed to do? Adrian, everybody up until this point has been honest about their fucking shit. Okay, you're 2 years into this. Nobody's lied about any of their accolades. So I was like, oh, hey, yeah, fucking
accolades,
gold medalists.
Let them be
go
accolades.
For
it. I told Gray to give themselves an accolade.
That's what you said, give myself an accolade.
Yeah, exactly.
What accolade would I want if I could have an accolade?
Gray has a gold medal now. Doesn't have to be anything specific. It could be metaphorical.
Yeah,
Gray gave it to herself.
Okay. That's fair.
Let's see. Let's talk about Okay, fine. Alex, you go.
No, I'm just joking.
No. You got this. You put this on yourself.
I have nothing. I'm just being silly.
I know. All right. How do we know each other, Gray?
Oh,
very loosely.
people kept asking me to create a Discord server, which I don't know. I like it was one of those things that like you're on TikTok, you have to have a Discord server. And so I think I was like asking for mods, and so Adrian very kindly decided to become a moderator for my Discord.
Yes, because I needed practice and I wanted to get in to figure out how to properly do stuff like setting a Discord up, which I had my own, but I didn't do anything with it too much. But then because it was for somebody else, I was like super motivated to like get the roles right and do all this other stuff and make sure channels are good and just like, kind of being everywhere. And I'm like, why can't I put that energy into my own work?
Yeah, I know. So. I got on the call with you and you were like, yes, this is, you have to have this type of rule, this type of rule. It was like you had a standardized template just ready to go. I was really impressed. A shocking level of professionalism for an unpaid labor.
Listen, it was more to get myself. Listen, that was like the first time I ever did any of that. I had a brief idea. I'm like, okay, Gray is a law student. I have to have everything in order.
Exactly. Yeah. Otherwise, if there's cracks, like the contractual agreement is just completely gonna break down.
My soul is forfeit.
Exactly. Yeah, you signed it over. Yeah.
It was pretty weird. There's nothing else. It just you get my soul if I mess up, and that was it.
Yeah, I like a warlock arrangement with all my moderators.
I feel like that's a fair way to run anything, though. Like, if you're gonna build an empire, you might as well start with the souls, and then you go from there.
Exactly.
But yeah, we got into D&D. I mean, I was always into D&D, and I ran...
Wait, you were always into D&D?
Yes.
What?
Shocking. It's my dad's fault. Don't blame me, it's hereditary. But I've also ran a, like, one-on-one session with Gray before, and we've kind of... I guess, was that like it wasn't your first time playing, but it was just like a reminder of, right?
No, that yeah, I've played many times before. I've been playing for like 5-6 years now, actually. So, yeah, I've been playing for a long time, but it was kind of like, I've never played for an audience, and then I had to do Rasputin's podcast, and I was like, I don't know how this character should act and be developed. And it really helped me because you put me through a bunch of different scenarios and I was able to sort of see how my character would experience those different people and places.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the history of how I know Gray, but I mean, Gray's been playing D&D for 5 years. And I'm just helping out with that one aspect, but Gray's ideas and how she displays her thought is very unique. That's why I started following her on TikTok. And I really enjoyed listening to the video essays, the TikTok essays and stuff like that, as well as the ones on YouTube. And it's just more well thought than I ever get put into it. So that's why it always intrigues me. My mind is fish brain and it's like, this is good because good. Until it actually happens 100 times, I'm like, oh, this is good because we did it together or whatever the reason is. But yeah, let's talk about some of your theories you want to just shoot at us.
Yes. Okay. Again, I have no structure here, so I'm not sure where to start. But I noticed that a lot of the times when people are running sort of pure modules, it basically becomes very walking simulator-y, where I think there's the randomization of the dice sometimes isn't allowed to shine through. To me, that's like the most beautiful thing about D&D is anything can happen. And when you haven't sort of fully fleshed out all the edges of your world, you end up putting your characters in a fishbowl. And then also something that I would love to see people do is that whenever they have a fixed story is to play with systems at least more. So at least there's a bit more to interact with the world. So that is one thing is I've noticed just that D&D can be very, I know there's this thing about like roll dice less to just focus on storytelling. But to me, there's that you could just write a novel, you know, there are mediums for that. D&D to me should be the perfect synthesis of randomization systems and narrative together.
Right. So you're putting forward this kind of all three of these things, the combat, the narrative and the, I guess, planning, or maybe I missed something, but all equal parts instead of one outweighing the other, not all combat, not all narrative, things like that, right?
It can be in different proportions, but they should all be present in the story where, like, the story should serve the randomization. Everything should serve each other. Like, mm-hmm. Whenever you roll badly, justifying it in terms of your story and in a way that's sort of logically consistent with your story, but also it honors the dice. Like, mm-hmm. That's one of the most sort of beautiful magic tricks that you can do in D&D.
Right.
Yeah. So like using the module as an outline or as like the template for a choose your own adventure. If you roll well, here's this outcome. If you roll poorly, here's this outcome from, I guess, the DM perspective, right? If you're creating this module or using it, these are the thing, like the stopping points that you need to get them to, but how they get there may be a different way than what you're expecting. Like that?
Yeah. Or even just extending something that is in the module just a bit further, like not being afraid to, yeah, use the module as logic rather than as text.
Right.
Yes. I get what you're saying. And I, you know, when you say that, I've definitely been guilty of doing that at the very beginning of you trying out modules. Like, I read the module, I'm like, this is what it says. And they asked me questions outside it. And part of me was like, well, I haven't thought that far. The book didn't tell me. What do I say? What do I do? That was my original way of doing things, because one, I was like, I'm afraid to get out of these creative lines, you know, and it does kind of like fishbowl around where it's like, this is the parameters I'm going to work in. The module is law. That's it. If they don't know it, there's no text to say it. Like, oh, this guy doesn't know anything then. I was definitely guilty of that at the beginning. That was until I started playing, I'm going to say it, Alex, Curse of Strahd, where I decided to like branch out and really decide I don't like it 100% the way they wrote it. I'm going to make it my own. And yes, these are the places they're going to go to, and these are the people they're going to meet. These people are going to have lives larger than the three paragraphs that they have. I think that it does happen to younger GMs, like myself, but I have developed a way into creating the story for my players, creating the story for myself and how I think it should go as well. And you know, the story must also work with everybody. Even though I assume this is how it's supposed to go, doesn't mean that it's always going to be that way. You know, me as the DM has power, but it's also the player's story. So when they use that role and they go left instead of right and they succeed, because I didn't think of it doesn't mean that doesn't happen. Because I didn't think of it means, oh, there's no way to go that way. There's no way to go left. I have to create something.
Sorry, I'm still bad at interrupting. I just had a question. Yeah. Do you have a story example of that where a player did something you completely didn't expect and you still honored it?
Yes. Adrian does.
I would love that.
All right, yeah. So this is with my Friday campaign. This is all homebrew. So I had planned for them to like be outside of this town for four levels, five levels. And I got to a point where they were chasing down some werewolves, and then they were low health and they didn't want to go down and fight them. So they were like, we're going to rest up here inside the den. There was a teleportation circle that took them to the big city that I didn't want them to go into yet. And I gave them, and they were like, I kind of described it and it made it flowery. I'm like, these stones amplify the power. And then this guy was like, if I pump my magic into the stones, do you think it could recreate the spell and activate it? And I'm like, you're going to have to use almost like all y'all's spells. And then even then, maybe not. And like, okay, sounds good. They do it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to roll a D100. If it rolls the amount of spell levels they put in, you know, then it works. So it was 1 out of 100 chance, and that happened.
Wait, one out of 100.
Yes,
that's awesome. You have to honor that.
Yeah. So like, they open the portal, and I have to like, I can't do anything at the like, and you smell the scent of bread. And I had to end it there because I did not know what was in that city. All I knew was they were going to be somewhere near a bakery. So after that session ended, I had to make a whole city and ready and shops and things and everything like that. But I honored it. I wasn't expecting that to happen. I didn't tell them no, they couldn't. I told them they could try. I let them try. And it turned into a very interesting story where I didn't de-level the monsters within, or not the monsters, but the people that were there. Some of them are monsters. and so they were fighting people that were way higher levels, and they were like almost one-shotting characters because they were being like intrusive in some dealings, because like they have the hero complex, you know. They've been in a campaign with me before. They feel like they're invincible. And I've brought this like, you're not supposed to be here feeling. And they're able to survive, to talk to people, to bargain instead of using their abilities. But later on, they've moved down the ladder and they've been able to save themselves and gain notoriety as well as honor within the city because they're so level, but they're still able to hold their own.
Yeah, I like that because it is like getting in an open world, beating a segment of the map much earlier than you're supposed to, and then getting way more XPs on you would if you were higher level.
Right.
and just be, or at least the XP is more valuable at your lower level. And so it's that like risk reward and that feeling of, yeah, being intruding into a space you're not meant to be in. Those are some of my favorite moments in video games where it's like, I am way under level here and I am still kicking ass. It's awesome.
Yes.
My little baby campaign that I ran two whole episodes on with my former college students, I completely forgot that this happened because, you know, that was almost 2 years ago. But I was running a module. I don't remember what I was running. Something from...
Fendelver?
I would be guessing and I would be lying to you, which makes me feel guilty, even though it literally doesn't matter to the story, right? it's fine. But I gave them their little quest board and they had the three level different levels of stuff to do. And of course they were like, let's do the one that's level 5. And I was like, are you sure? And so thinking about that, that's when having that person in your group who is a little more pushy with the DM is good for DM growth in the ability of like, yeah, we can fucking do this. And maybe we have to be creative and maybe everybody has to think in different ways. But as frustrating as that was, like making me think on my toes, now remembering I could probably be a little bit of a better DM than I was when we started this whole thing. But like, find that chaos gremlin. I would try to say 6 words at one time. Find the chaos gremlin in your party and like, just let them be a little chaotic. And it'll make you a better DM, and you'll have to be a little more creative. But that does, it gives fullness to the world around it. And, you know, there's always that balance of the DM not having the, like, forcing your players into doing specific things, right? You can still create a full world following a module, but not making it seem like no matter what you do, you're going to get to the same point. Like, it doesn't matter. You could just press A the whole time and you're going to get to this point. And that's boring. That's
my. Can you think of a specific example or a specific narrative beat that the Chaos Gremlin created?
for that specific day, I remember just being like, are you sure you want to go down here? Like, it's very challenging. I pulled in some NPCs that was like, I've lost 3 men while trying to save this person. And they were like, no, fuck it. Level 1, we got this. They're like, cool. Okay. So like, no matter what I threw at the party, they were like, no, we're this is the mission for us. This is the quest for us. We're doing this. Mm-hmm. Right. And so them being stubborn and rather than it being a battle of wills, like just letting that happen. And if they died, then they died. Great. That's their problem. Not mine.
Did you say college students?
I did say college students.
Are you a professor?
No, I used to be. So like in my old age, I was an academic advisor at Texas Tech and then UT Dallas. And when I was working at UT Dallas, I also had to teach like a freshman class. And it was during COVID. And so all of my students were having a hard time connecting with other students. So I was like, I just started this podcast with Adrian. Let me just pretend that I know how to be a DM.
That's me.
And so we had a little Discord and I got to play a couple of games with them before, you know, midterms comes over, computer science and engineering students, and just ruins everybody's lives.
That's the certified best way to connect with people.
It is.
I'm currently trying to make a friend. I hope she doesn't see this, but I'm currently trying to make a friend through a D&D campaign.
You know, it only took 2 years, but I finally met one of the people that I've met online that lives in Los Angeles, so it's possible.
That's awesome. She's in person at my law school. She played D&D with her professor. The first thing that I think we were sort of like awkwardly talking to each other, and then I saw D&D blocked down her calendar when she was showing me her classes, and I was like, that's an in. And she was like, yeah, I have like a little druid piercing. I pierced it just for my druid earring. I was just like, oh, okay, you like D&D like a lot though. So that was, now she's playing a sorcerer, and I need a good support character because I just want to be in her good graces, you know?
Are y'all playing in the same campaign?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're having my neighbor DM.
So it's like an awkward, like, meet cute between you two and being friends.
Yeah. Excited.
What was your
And I
move?
found out she's queer too, and you know, just like a lot of similarities.
It's always nice. The more similarities, the more party comes together.
Naturally.
Oh my gosh, stop.
You
It's a
fucking said
name.
it, Adrian.
I didn't
You
say
run.
naturally.
You
I
said
didn't
it comes
say
together. You expect anybody who
it.
knows you outside of just this podcast to not finish that statement with
Listen,
naturally?
listen, that wasn't my idea to have it that as the so for context, Gray, there's another podcast that I run the DM for called Coming Together Naturally. And every time now, Alex and anybody that's in that sphere, every time I say it, has to do that. Not contractually, just it just happens.
Okay, I'll honor this agreement when I hear it next.
So is this just a two-player game that you're playing, Gray?
Oh no, that would be very romantic. No, it's another person there. There's another friend who's also been trying to find a DM for a very long time. He likes to play giant characters who throw people a lot, which I think is a very nice choice, because it always leaves so someone gets to be the cheerleader and you know feel supported and thrown.
Gotcha.
Right, as we
So
all do.
there's a throwy
Help in our life.
character, a
Yeah.
sorcerer. What's gonna.
I feel like okay, so there's two options. I could
Yes,
either
yes,
be the
yes.
throne, I could be the missile, right? And
Yes.
fulfill my cheerleader dreams, because I was clearly not a cheerleader in high school. Or I could be like the ultimate simp bard person for the sorcerer.
That's always a nice character. Simp bard or cleric or a rogue. Those are my three at that. The rogue mainly to supplement damage as well as steal things for other people. Like, here you go. Did you need this component for your spell? Or no, it's sorcerer. They don't need components.
Paladin, maybe then, because if it's damage and also trying to support a little bit.
I like that one
Paladin
too.
sounds like it could lead to a just really good friendship or like a romantic partner, right? So if you're going the bard route, like obviously there's going to be some tension
Yeah.
just naturally with that character. And is that the kind of bond you want to bring with this new person? Like, look at us manipulating people with like D&D classes. Like, what the fuck?
We're just trying to practice the social what ifs, okay? We've
Right, why
talked
not?
about this before. Like, so what if we held hands at the goblin camp, okay?
I would say I would be more willing to go down with and think of it seriously as with the paladin. I think if you were a bard, I would flirt mercilessly with you. But I don't know if I'd be like, ah, this is the person for me, right? Does that,
Yeah,
it's
Paladin gives like, you know, long-term partner energy, right? Steady, moving in, giving the keys to you.
it's
settling
Paladin
down, having
in
a
the
garden.
streets, rogue in the sheets. Is that what we're officially saying?
Yeah, I think
Oh
so. Maybe I'll do a rogue Paladin, you know, just to show that I'm
yeah.
multifaceted. Three levels paladin, right? To get the was when do you get that like aura thing?
Ooh, I think it's like, I want to say eight, if I'm just off the top
Oh
of my
shoot.
head.
Okay. Well.
As the not rules lawyer, I have a guy in my
Oh.
campaign who does it for me, and he's just like
Wow.
off the top of his head every time.
Okay. Well, I know that fighter is two attacks at level two, which is I know that because it is like that is what you need for that optimization. So I was thinking of doing Paladin Fighter just to get those two hits in. But Paladin Rogue, Paladin Bard could be fun. But I mean, Paladin Bard isn't very effective at level five. We're only doing level five.
Sixth level aura of protection. Had to
Yeah.
look it up. How much I rely on you, Joseph. I'm so sorry. Thank you for being there for me. Anyways.
So I yeah, it's funny that you're not a rules lawyer because like I think it comes across very clearly that I am a very rules based person. So I want to know, have you ever homebrewed a system that you very much stuck to the entire time?
Like, as in for like roles or certain like activities, things like that,
Yeah,
or
like you're like I could either just do this narratively or I could create a system with rules that I'll follow.
no, I'm gonna say no. Mainly for the fact
Really?
that if something comes up that they're like, how would I go about this? I'm gonna attribute it to the closest, skill challenge, or potentially, I'll have it. But usually these rules or these systems are just one-offs, and I usually forget about them later. So, let's see. Well, there was some kind of like long-term, not long-term. Okay, so we weren't technically in combat, but they were listening in on a conversation, and they had to get out of the room and hide. And instead of everyone rolling stealth, everybody rolling, because like as if one person messes up, it slows down, we get into combat. And it's not the story that they wanted to tell at the time, and that's fine by me. So I instead of it having to be all stealth checks, I said, okay, all five of you have one skill to use. You can't overlap skills, and you all have to roll it. If the majority of you all succeed, then we proceed. If not, then we'll go into combat. So it was a better idea than just everyone hide. It brought more to the story. It brought more to who they were as characters. It defined them differently. So skill challenges I picked up from a friend. It might be in the book, but I've read only so much of it before I decided I'm just gonna play. I'm tired of reading. Let's just do it. I just go all in. Even if I know half the rules, I'm like, I'm confident I can bullshit my way through most of this. And to be honest, the flow of things when, if I don't know, I'll make it up. And and if you do know, let me know and I'll change it. But for now, because I want to keep playing, I don't want to go through the manual, flip through hundreds of pages to find this one rule or Google. Just like, here's my call. We're going to do it like this. And then if we find out the real rules, we'll change it. Everything's tentative. Nothing is permanent. The rules are a suggestion. If you're playing make believe. So I feel like the way I implement things isn't very strict, and that allows my players to be more free with what their actions are.
So I completely agree. I think that there's oftentimes, like I said, the system isn't in service of the story. That happens so much. It's you want to tell, if you want to tell a cyberpunk story and you're using a D&D system, you are going to have to make some changes. It is just not going to work super well using the base game. But another thing that I, in the part of my little sort of thesis statement is I think there are way too many hidden rules in D&D games. I think DMs have their own idea for how a puzzle works, for how physics works, for how humans interact with each other. And they don't evidence it in the same way that a video game does. Like a video game gives you a tutorial. They say, this is how you attack an enemy, this is how you talk to people, this is how you charm them, blah, blah, blah. In D&D games, hopping from one to another, it's like I can say the same thing to a character or sort of, try to follow the plot the same way, and I'm going to reach a completely different result. And so what I wish people would do is give mini in universe tutorials. Like, for example, I had good examples. I'm sorry. Now
No,
tell me what you
go.
guys think, but I'll have an example.
No, I
I
think
think it.
that no, sorry. That makes a
No, we're
lot
good.
of sense because how there's I had two things that were floating around in my brain when you said how to interact with the environment, right? Or people. There are different ways to interact with different people, right? So you're in this made-up world, supposedly. It's still made up, right? But we know the rules in this world, in this existence, of how to talk to different people. I know how to address the person at Target, and I know how to address my boss, and in what words I need to use. And they're not going to be the same words, but sometimes they are the same words. But if you are are starting a new campaign in a new environment, a new world, we are assuming, right, that however I interact with this world is going to be similar to how I interact in this other world. But then all of these people who are coming to the table all have different inner ways of interacting in the world. And so there's not like one way to do that, which makes a lot of sense why people, especially people who are neurodivergent, really like video games, because there is only one way to interact with these things. They're generally the same, right? I know if I'm going to talk to an NPC, most of the time they're going to give me some like line. And maybe two or three lines, but they're going to repeat those lines over and over and again, over again. But that's not how people work. And so it does bring that like chaos order into the game of how do we do this, but still feeling like the real world, but also feeling like a game. Like, how do we marry those two ideas?
Yeah, I think on that, I would like there to be a mini tutorial. Like, this sounds really systematic, but whenever you introduce a character that the players will have to interact with a lot, like, just knowing that they have a consistent motivation and personality, so at least once the characters butt up against that once, they know that that's going to be the key to interaction in the future. So it just feels like there's actual logic behind that human. That's one thing. And then now I have my examples, which I think will illuminate it better. Like, for example, if you've decided that spells like a cone of cold can be used out of battle to, you know, smother a fire or something, like, show that, like, have a character outside of battle use that particular spell just to show that that's how physics works in your world. Like, you can use spells for various different purposes. Or even if there's a character, if there's a world concept you have, like I did like a cyberpunk story, and mm-hmm. I wanted to sort of drive the point home that people are commodified and that capitalism is run rampant or whatever. So I created a character whose body parts were entirely just NFTs, and it was on the market. So whenever the value of the NFT went up, the guy would get stronger, and when it went down, he would get weaker. So outside of battle, the characters could manipulate the guy's power levels. And what that taught them about the world, I hope, is that the world is not about brute force. It's also about market forces.
The enemy is
That's
always
so crazy.
The economy.
Yeah.
Capitalism.
Yeah, exactly. The real enemy, you know?
Yeah. I know. We know. Yeah. I think it's an interesting idea. I mean, it does help to have more outside forces, because you're not the only, you know, you're not the only adventurer, and even new adventurers can find interesting ways of doing things, just like new players can find interesting ways that potentially the GM didn't think about, or any of the other people. Like, oh yeah, that sounds really cool. New players always increases the diversity of how you go about things. With the idea of like how to interact with, you know, other NPCs, I think that's a tougher sell, especially with,
yeah,
with there being so many GMs on how they go about things. But it could give you an early access view of like, are they willing to kind of reach out to my kind of wavelength to be able to kind of work with me. And also how they perceive how conversations are supposed to work is different than the next person. I mean, if we knew what the next person knew about conversations in the world, we wouldn't have so many discourses. Like, just like, oh no, he's this kind of person. He's always going to act like that. But it doesn't show like, oh, he's the bad guy. He's just going to be bad. But instead, there should be a deeper underlying thing. Like, he was bad because bad things happened to him, and he wanted this one good thing, and he never got it. So he's striving for good for himself because he felt like he never received that. But, you know, when we see these kind of cartoonish characters, I mean, I'll be real though, new cartoons out here are having a lot more deeper conversations than I ever saw before. But you know, you're like, oh, bad guys, they have to do everything bad. You know, I think me and my friends tried a all villain campaign, and it was just, we just set fire to a town, and that was it. And we're like, this doesn't feel good. Let's just go back to being heroes.
What about anti-hero campaign? All anti-heroes campaign. I feel like that'd be more fun.
I definitely think so as well. I think that we had a naive thought of what being bad was. Mm. Let's just do the opposite of what our characters would do. Mm. Instead of, what is our motivation? This was like the freshman year in college. And we were not thinking. I think if I had done a villain campaign now, I think it would be a lot different. There'd be more nuance to it compared to what I had back then. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I need to finish my sentences when I start talking, saying them.
Go in deeper. What nuances do you think you would include if you were to do an all villains campaign right
backstory,
now?
Backstory, purpose, not being evil all the time.
Is the purpose and backstory a justification?
Yeah, yeah. Instead of just do the opposite, it's more like, you have a reason for pushing this old lady out of the way. It's because your Nana, who everyone saw was sweet, was always, like, beating on you. You know? Some weird reason.
But you know? And it also makes it more interesting to actually interact with that character, because it's not just beat the shit... Oh, am I allowed to swear?
Yes, yes.
Okay, it's not just beat the shit out of them. It's like, oh, maybe if you show empathy towards old people, they're going to be less likely to kill you. Like, there's other now modes of interaction with that person other than pure violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I think that's what would be different for sure. And especially, like, not being evil all the time. Like, if you're evil all the time, you got a target on your back. You know, being more, you know, fake, more manipulative to, like, oh no, I didn't do that. Gatekeepy, gaslighting. Instead of just like, of course they did that, I'm evil, twisting my mustache, yeah. You know?
We need more everyday bad guys. Like, we need more just like douchebag ex bad guys in the
game. No, for sure. I think I kind of tried to play that. I played a game of Thirsty Sword Lesbians where I was like a manipulative, like, partner to, like, all these other
sweet little NPC.
Yeah, sweet little NPCs who were being gaslit. So, but then the heroes came in and showed them that there's better ways.
You can do better. You can find a high value lesbian, or
yes.
Everyone was a lesbian in this game.
Okay, you can find a high value lesbian. You know.
Yes, it was quite tough because me as an individual cannot flirt. It is tough. I feel awkward, and everybody was working very well with me. Thank you, Alex, Tony, Paige.
I think I watched that stream.
Oh, that was, oh.
I think you did.
Yeah.
I think you did.
Yeah. Yeah, I was at a stream where I think I kept hearing you say, guys, I'm so sorry. I can't flirt.
That's right, guys.
Yeah, I was just, oh man, that really sucks, but you know, this is the campaign that was chosen to be done.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting, because I, like, in my head, I'm sitting here trying to, I don't know, figure out what is a villain, right? Now I'm asking the big questions. What is a villain? Is it someone that does, like, things that you just don't agree with? Because then, aren't you just a villain because you maybe don't agree with somebody else? But who says that that other person is wrong, and who says that I am right? And so I'm sitting on this podcast once again having like an existential crisis of what is a like capital V villain. Like twisty mustache, putting a young person on some train tracks. Is that a villain? And why are they doing that? Like is that... Maybe that little person, I don't know. Maybe that person deserved it. Maybe she deserves it.
So, like, an antagonist, obviously, is just, like, it's the antithesis of what the hero wants. But you're right that villains involve some tinge of morality. But I can't think of whether villains are meant to reinforce our morality systems or disrupt them. Because there are villains like Killmonger who, you know, make us reevaluate our belief systems. But then there are some like the cartoonish murdering babies villains that are just, they're comforting, they're affirming, because we're thinking, well, we don't kill babies, we must be different, we must be one of the good guys.
Yeah, I think, I mean, every time I kept thinking, like, good villains, Killmonger comes right to the top.
Joker is another one, because there are so many iterations of the Joker that we can see all different flavors of that, like, insanity, that quote-unquote insanity, right? Just fucking up to fucking up's sake.
Well, no, but, like, the Joker, I feel like, is kind of like Killmonger in that it highlights the flaws of Batman's and our belief system, that, you know, when there's a good guy, then crime will stop and things will be okay and people will stop getting hurt. But isn't there like the whole, I'm not a DC fan, I'm not a Marvel fan, but isn't there that whole thing about there's no Joker without Batman? Yes. Like, there's no, right? So it's like maybe the strong stance and the vigilante approach being taken to justice is what creates an oppositional force.
I feel like a good example of one of the iterations of Joker that doesn't need Batman is that the one with Joaquin Phoenix, where it's just about society itself. And, you know, all these iterations of Joker always kind of tackle a bunch of different things. So when we talk about the Joker and Batman, it's like you said, Gray, you know, there can't be a Joker without Batman or Batman without Joker, which means, like, because there's so much quote-unquote good, there has to be this antithesis of evil kind of coming in, but showing a, you know, a different side of what could be and what are people free to do. Do we have to be under such strict law, or do we move outside the law and work in the shadows or whatever it is? Or are you just a regular thug who's trying to just make a living? Or are you outside that idea of villainy to the point where it's like, or outside of society, you know? Sorry, let me just rewind real quick. You can be that thug that's trying to work to be inside of society, or that villain that works beyond society to break that. So I feel like there's a lot of levels to even touching Batman and Joker.
I mean, like,
I'm thinking about it.
Like, real life, like the mob, right? So the mob had a code of conduct, supported the family members, but also, like, struck fear into the laws, like, the eyes of men. Like, also did create chaos, but then was also fighting the police officers, right? Because there's crime happening, stealing and gambling and, you know, things that we deem illegal in the United States. But were they villainous? Were people like that? Because they're taking care of somebody. So even like an everyday stereotypical thug, like, what's that backstory with Joker and Joaquin Phoenix's Joker? Can we blame him for being off the rails, if you will?
They show you the reasons why a person could become that. You know, systems failing and people who are seen as productive members of society not being good people, even though they are considered good.
That would be a really good D&D campaign. I'm imagining it now. Like, your character is creating systems that are just so oppressive that no matter what your characters do, they can't quite get out of them, except if they act in slightly villainous ways, and then just sort of pushing them to the edge on that until they either leave or break the system entirely, as a commentary on how sort of remaining a cog in this, or they can hurt other people in the system to get to the top of the system. And so it's kind of like, yeah, commentary on the system. On society.
I feel like a lot of consent needs to happen in those campaigns with people having everyday trauma of being a cog in the system.
Just like having to file paperwork, like one mechanic where it's like, you won't get your meds if you don't file your fantasy paperwork.
Is that a constitution save?
Yeah, or no, it's like an intelligence or willpower save. No, it's a willpower save because it takes... I feel like it just takes, or maybe a combination of both. It's just like you have to sit there and do it.
Right now in the Friday game that I have, there's not a lot of people being saved. There's a lot of infighting between guilds right now. And people, guilds are using other guilds for their benefit and teaming up and, you know, slighting other people. And there's like, is there a police here? I'm like, no, just the guilds versus the guilds. So they're trying to make a system in which that they can protect everybody so that some of these guilds don't start beating up on, like, not younger. But...
So you're... Sorry? Oh, yeah.
It's the mob. You've got mob things happening.
That's what's... Potentially, yeah. I mean, hey, listen, I didn't tell them to do that. They just made it on their own, okay? My players decided to make the police. But we'll see what happens. It might become a mob, to be honest. But right now, like, I understand there's a stupid reason at the top, and
it's capitalism.
We'll see what happens.
It's capitalism.
I think it's a little bit more sinister than capitalism.
Oh, no.
So, other than capitalism, what are some themes that you've been able to sneak into your campaigns that you're really proud of?
Let's see. What? Past actions causing a ripple effect. So something from the first campaign that wasn't supposed to be related to this campaign at first, until they all decided, hey, I'm going to bring people from the old campaign that were NPCs in your story into this. So I've made ripple effects into this campaign now. So your past decisions have now dictated the future.
These actions will have consequences.
Yes. It's like more of like a long chain of events, like a butterfly effect that has finally hit them in their face at this point. So I've done that. I think in the other one, the podcast game, anyone that plays in the game or is listening to the podcast, you can't hear this part. There's a big religion side that I haven't really delved into due to the fact that they thought they were onto it, and then the trail got cold for them because they're asking the wrong questions because other stuff happened. But there's a religion side of things that is going to be more prominent in this next arc than the first one. So I'm starting to talk about religion as, you know, a weird dual-edged sword where, you know, some people could be influenced in a positive manner, but doesn't mean everybody is. Other people are just using it for show, and some people are using it for personal gain. I talk about that kind of stuff in my campaign as well.
So capitalism.
Where, like,
it all comes back to capitalism. Yeah, I said a non-capitalist theme.
I thought religion was a non-capitalist theme.
You have to remove any intersectionality. Just
oh my gosh. I guess I just have to find a new campaign where I just use the barter system. I don't know.
Commentary on feudalism. Feudalism really sucks, guys.
My Starlight Ascension, it is capitalism because we're playing, like, it feels like, Borderlands, where there's one corporation that controls the galaxy, and here we are trying to fight the corruption of that corporation. So I currently am not playing in anything that is not capitalistic in nature. So, I mean,
I like, what is it, using 5e or a different?
We are using 5e. The first episode is up. The second one should be up because Adrian's doing an amazing job.
I'm doing the third episode.
Adrian is, the third episode may be up, and Adrian's doing an amazing job.
I'm almost done. I got 20 minutes left.
It's a lot of audio.
Well, yeah, and then also Robin was like, use some. I'm like, what is too much and what is not enough? And my brain just like, do I just skip everyone I think should have sound effects or should I not? Like, I cleaned up the audio. It took me like 10 hours, to be honest. It was because it's new people that I'm not used to, and I by the end of the thing, I could read people's ums in waveform, so, like, I knew where to look.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Wait, have you seen, now I forget what it's called, but the Dimension 20 Starstruck Odyssey, I think it's called.
Not yet.
Okay, it's a good example of that, like space opera, space corporations. Yeah, lots of interesting stuff about commodification of bodies, one of my favorite themes. I love that stuff. Like someone who has to pay for every puff of air that he breathes in because his entire body is rented out from like a cyborg corporation. He has a lot of debt.
Yep. And the debt keeps getting worse and worse.
Yep.
I got to like the second episode and then I stopped because I told myself I'd finish the seven first before I finished it, which is one of the other Dimension 20 campaigns.
Oh, but the Starstruck Odyssey is the best one. Like, no, seriously, it's the best one because if you look at all the cast members, they
Yes.
all are good at a thing. And in Starstruck Odyssey, they get to do that thing. Like, Allie, they're really, really good at actually seeming competent. Like, they're usually the goofy character that messes up, but they are so wicked cool when they're competent. And so they get to be a high-powered businesswoman. And then there's Zach, who is always best when he's doing sound effects, and he's a brain slug. Oh, spoilers! He's a brain slug,
No, I knew that. It's
so
all
he
good.
gets to do all the like crazy, slimy sound effects that a slime would have. I could go on and on. Every college humor person that I've been following for years has it's just like the perfect role for them. It has been created for them.
Okay, I'll do it. I'll finish
Is that
it.
a good
It doesn't
plan?
take much, okay? I'm very easily bent to people's will.
It's good. It's really good. I mean, what do you like in a D&D show? Are you more of a fantasy person?
I'm trying to think. No, it just depends on the type of storytelling. Like, I know the main crew of Dimension 20 does a really good job of that. It doesn't seem like anybody's being overshadowed. People are having their spots, and they're very invested in their characters. And then, that's my only, like, I don't know. I can't get into CR, Critical Role. There we go. I tried. I watched 11 episodes. It was just such a slog. I know people are keep telling me you have to just give it a chance up into like, or just watch the Briarwood arc, and I'm like, I just can't. I mean, I'll try eventually. I'll put it on my list, but don't know. It's tough. I
It's
don't
not a
have
show for someone with ADHD. It's just, it's
a.
not. It really is not.
But I mean, I've watched that. I've listened to Nadpod just the first season. I was working on the second season. Decided to move on to something else. I don't know. I can't tell you. It depends on the group dynamic. I think that's the most important part because, like, in the beginning of Critical Role, they have that one character that's eventually like moved out. So I feel like there's a couple other podcasts that I can see that there's a character that might be replaced later on, and they do that because of how they interact with the flow of conversation and the flow of everyone kind of getting along. If I usually can notice that, and I'm just like, I feel uncomfy listening to this because I feel that I know the tension that they're pretending to not have.
Yep.
So it just depends.
That's so true. That's actually a really good point. Whenever the characters don't feel like they have a reason to talk to each other, or even just one feels like they're not from the same universe, it is pretty grating. I do think that Dimension 20 has that sometimes. Like, I think in the non-Starstruck seasons, I think Zach Oyama oftentimes has a hard time having a more complex motivation that would lead him to interact with the other characters. Like he's a good guy, a good fireman in the Unsleeping City. And then he is, what was the other one that he was? Gorgon,
Lacan.
he was more integrated, I think. But what was the other one that he did?
What was.
Oh, Cloud, the Cloud Man. When he was
Yeah, I don't know
Cloud
his
Man, he
last
had
name.
no reason to interact with anyone because he was this mystical monk character with no real connection other than I do a lot of magic, please like my magic, and I love you, the queen. That was such a single sort of tone character that it was weird to see him interact with anyone who wasn't the queen.
Yeah, and I also saw that with like What was Emily's character? After her first character died, came in, and, you know, bastard child of Lou Wilson's character. Gosh, I can't think of names right now.
Saccharina.
Yeah, Saccharina.
Yeah.
Like, it was a cool, interesting character, but it felt like, because that dynamic wasn't, like, because of, like, the first scene that they all did together, the first episode that they all did together, it felt good, but then when all these, like, Zach's character and Emily's character come in, it felt like, how do we make these characters flow in at a good, decent, like, pace or feels natural? Because it feels weird as people who have watched it, but I think it's understanding for, you know, characters to die, but I don't know. It did feel weird when people were bringing new characters in, and I wonder. I hope to see that more of that. So maybe there's a better way, or maybe I know how to do that better. Because I've had to do that as well. I killed a character off, and I had to bring in the new character in, and it was a bit of a. I made a dream episode where they kind of fell into each other's dreams, so that they quote unquote were fated to meet each other. I somehow. Make a reason, but yeah,
I do think that the solution for Dimension 20 was essentially Saccharina is now the center of the universe, and so it was Saccharina was well integrated because they kind of all the gravity pulled everyone around her, but that definitely left people like Liam, who felt like just was slotted in. I loved Liam, but just felt like not from the same universe. And obviously Cloud Man.
So what do you think are good ways to integrate characters or players who have lost characters? How do you integrate those new characters?
I think, for me, I think that it is always helpful to just put them in the center somehow of all of the relationships. Even if it means they're related to one person, but they have a personality that would grate on another person, so they have a reason to interact with them, or that they feel attracted to another character, just creating a character that has a reason to be there, and preferably in some way that interacts with the plot. Also, my favorite thing is creating characters based off of themes. So if you have a theme gap in your character roster, like you have someone who represents death in various characters that represent death in various ways, and you have a novel way to represent death or something, whatever your theme is, then it feels natural because there's that friction between one way of viewing the world and another way of viewing the world.
That's very good. Yeah. I haven't thought about like entering themes as like filling a spot. I understand, like, I've created characters of a theme, like to just be that kind of person or that kind of idea, but never to fill a void. So I think that's interesting. You got my gears going up here. I'm thinking a lot now.
I think we should do that so much more, like, thematically. I think that fantasy, when we use fantasy as a tool, so unquestioned, and we have so many themes in there, like, just I'm sure you would all agree it was created in a very sort of Eurocentric orientalist kind of way, and when you're incorporating that into your world, it's saying something. You're just pretending it's not saying something. And so, like, highlighting those themes and having them interact with your characters in different ways and having them clash and uncover the errors and the sort of weird ridges of the world and the worldview brought by Wizards of the Coast at the time is way more interesting than just being like, okay, and yeah, we have that race that does things that are traditionally associated with this real life culture. Like,
big yikes, wizards.
No, love you, but like... But it's like whenever you watch old movies, it's not enough to say, oh, it was just of its time. You watch it and then you love it for what it is, or you at least dissect it for what it is. So, for example, I was watching Blade Runner for a class and we were having conversation and I was sort of pointing out the gender stuff where we were watching Blade Runner. They sort of brutally murder all of the women who take agency over their sexuality. And then the women who don't have agency over their sexuality are, or that one woman, she's special, she's soft, she's taken care of, and she's humanized. And there's also all that sort of Orientalist stuff. And other students during our conversation were saying, well, it's an old movie, and if we throw out every piece of old fiction, then we're going to have no fiction left because it's all problematic. And to me, they kind of wanted to sever the Orientalism and the gender-based violence from the rest of the text. And that does such a disservice to the work because the Orientalism and the gender stuff, it's saying something. Like, they intended that to say something. With Orientalism, they were representing otherness in a very particular way. And it's not enough to just be like, oh, and that's just going to be over there. Or, okay, we can make fun of it. It pervades the work and we should examine it in more detail. And I think it's that way with D&D and the fantasy material we've been given.
And I think mm-hmm. that's an important thing to remember in like your day-to-day life, that when something starts to feel uncomfortable or you're starting to realize things, like there's a reason for that and it's okay to talk about it. It's okay to examine it further and look at why it makes you feel a certain way. If you're feeling uncomfortable with something, like, why does that make you feel uncomfortable? I like to point out that before I was actively coming out, I myself, like, hated anything that had to do with two girls liking each other. Because I was like, there's no way you would see me liking, like, Sailor Neptune and Sailor Uranus and apply that to me, like, oh, you also like girls. Like, in my brain, I was like, that's obviously what you're going to do. When you see that my two favorite characters are cousins in the United States, but are together everywhere else, like, you're going to associate that with me. And I obviously can't like that. So I'm going to push that so far away. But once, you know, you start uncovering, you know, parts of your personality, you're like, oh, okay, well, I felt that kind of way because I didn't want to be associated because I had negative ideas of what it was to be queer or a lesbian or gay or anything. Those were still inherently there because of the culture and the times. And like, it's okay to have had those feelings, but it's not okay to feel like that about me now or to feel like being queer in any sense is a bad thing. And if I hadn't just leaned into maybe opening that up, then you wouldn't get this person here today in whatever form and fashion I'm currently in. But, you know, do some work. It's okay. Like, don't be scared.
Yeah.
What a beautiful sentiment. We did have reached the hour mark. Do we have any last questions?
Gray, we need a part two. I need more theories because I know we didn't touch the whole deep. There's got to be more in there.
Thank you. I am glad that my intense theorizing wasn't alienating as it can be.
No, I thoroughly enjoy having these conversations. Some things might go over my head and I'm like, that sounds interesting, like a dumb, you know, hillbilly. But other things, I'm like, hell yeah, I have something to say there. So, you know, I'm always glad to talk about this kind of stuff because it's also kind of thought-provoking in my own sense to kind of question, what am I doing? Do I do things that I'm not noticing that contribute to, you know, positive gameplay that I'm not actually thinking about? I'm just, like interested in. Maybe I should think about it more so that I can hone that skill. Or is there something that I'm not even thinking about, like themes in my characters that I could be definitely doing that, bringing that to games to other people? So I enjoy these conversations. All right. Where can they find you, Gray?
My YouTube channel, I haven't said this in a really long time out loud. Graythorn, I think, is just the full name of my YouTube channel. And then Graythornian is the TikTok. And you should mainly just go to the YouTube because in the TikTok, you're just going to get spliced up versions of my YouTube videos because I'm going to do the YouTube more rigorously. I'm writing a script right now about the intersection between my autism and video games, and it kind of has some stuff to do with this kind of conversation. Like, I literally question everything all the time, the structures, the genres, always. And that should be interesting. So I'm going to push myself to finish that. So yeah, come watch me on my YouTube and my TikTok.
Oh yeah. Oh.
Thank you, dear listener, for joining us with another episode of Dungeons and Degrees. You can continue to follow all of our beautiful conversations and antics on all of the social media platforms at Dungeon and Degrees. Some of them are missing the S and some of them are not. So, like, don't come at me, or come at me in the comments and, like, give everything likes and comments. And that way the algorithm thinks we're doing a good job, but it's really just because you're mad that we're missing an S in some places and we have an S in the other places. And that's totally fine with me, because all that drives me is likes and comments.
Deliberately mispronounce everything. That's the trick.
Yes. Every time I mispronounce something, it's deliberate. It's not because I read a lot and I didn't talk a lot. That's not it. You can also join us on our Discord server, where you get to ask us to ask questions to our guests. And if you've been a part of us for quite some time, you know that we've had some pretty rad guests. So please join us out there so you can also grow another D&D community. But if you're like, Alex, that's not enough, I need to give you my money, my hard-earned dollar bills, please help support us on Patreon. This is absolutely a passion project, but it would be nice to be able to upgrade things like computers or earphones, or get Adrian a bed that makes itself whenever we get to watch him on video. Like, all of these things would just be perfect. Our benefits for you, not just for us, but for you, include ad-free episodes and a behind-the-scenes look at what we do. And we donate money for all of our patrons that are currently subscribed. You can join our patrons, such as Skylar, Megan, Alex, Wani, Lucy, Mr. Lawrence, only the best, Paige, and the love of my life, and every day since I have met this person, Noah. You could be like them and help us grow a family.
All right. Thank you all so much for listening. My name's Adrian.
And I'm Alex.
And I'm Gray.
Go have some fun.